This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show, along with my co-host and Counseling Center colleague, Catherine Howell. In case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM, or you can listen online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu, or you can listen on the Crimson White app and just click on the 90.7 live streaming link. Also, if you have any ideas, I always announce this, and I try to make a point to announce it every week, because we have most of our shows scheduled until the end of this semester, which will end early because of COVID, so everybody's supposedly leaving by the end of November. So we'll do shows up until right before Thanksgiving holiday. And then for the spring, we may need some ideas for some new shows. So if you have those ideas, please email those to me at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. And of course, I'll consider using your show topic. I'll try to remember to give that email out again sometime during the show tonight. Every helping professional should be alert to the potential for burnout. Burnout is described as the single most common personal consequence of practicing therapy, and under stressful working conditions, counselors using poor coping strategies may become disenchanted, discouraged, irritated, frustrated, and confused, resulting in poor job performance, thus indicating the severity of this problem. If you haven't guessed already, the topic of tonight's show is helper burnout. And let me just tell you, any counselor is lying if they say they have not experienced some form of burnout, fatigue, etc. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. My guest tonight is Aiden Burkus. Aiden's been on the show in the past, but it's been a couple of years and we were talking about something totally different. But I've invited him to come back and talk to us about helper burnout. Aiden is a licensed master social worker with a background in criminal justice settings. He's previously worked as a social worker for the Tuscaloosa County Public Defender's Office and was formerly the lead case manager for the Second Chance program. Hey, Aiden, thank you for being on the show.
Hey, PJ, it's good to see you. Thanks for having me back. It's been too long.
Yeah, it's been a little while. You know, helper burnout, I was trying to think if we've done a show about this before, because I thought I had done a show about this. But actually, I was the president of the Alabama Counseling Association chapter here in Tuscaloosa. West Alabama really covered several counties. And I had a speaker a while back come and talk to us about compassion fatigue. So that's the only experience I've had with someone really giving us a little more in-depth information about burnout. And I'll ask you a little bit the difference, but for now, tell the listeners a little more about yourself, other than my intro that I just gave about you, your credentials, and why you're interested in this topic.
Oh man, I think you're giving me a little too much credit that I'm more in depth.
Do you have guest burnout now?
Well, like your intro graciously reported, I am a licensed master social worker, graduated from the MSW program there at the university back in 2016 with Catherine, your co-host. I spent some time dealing with clients in very high risk factor settings, in and out of the criminal justice system, just trying to help them do what they needed to do to not go to prison, simply put. So that level of participation in someone's life where you have very little control over an outcome, but you're still just as invested, kind of pushed me towards feeling burnout, which is, as you said, different from compassion fatigue, but there is definitely some of that too. So this is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. Spent a lot of time over the last few years thinking about burnout, ways to avoid it.
Yes. And, you know, when I was doing research, I've been a counselor now for a while. I don't want to say how long, but it's been a long time. And I also have a private practice on the side. And when I started the private practice, I saw many, many, many children and teenagers that had gone through DHR. And so when I was researching for the show tonight, I thought, you know, what has been the most difficult population to work with personally for me? You know, what if any population is going to burn me out, what would it be? I think it would be children for me.
I hear that.
I had to limit, you know, how many children, when I started working here and then I did the private practice on the side, you know, I could be a little pickier with who I chose to see in my private practice. I had to set boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I chose to stop seeing children because it does take a lot of energy that I wouldn't have at the end of the day sometimes, you know.
I get that. When I started the MSW program at Alabama, it's divided into two tracks. There's a children's section, if you will,
in
mental health. And I gladly jumped on the adult track. I'm right there with you. I don't think I could have handled the vicarious traumas you experience from working.
That's exactly right. It's physically exhausting mentally and emotionally too, especially kids from DHR. It was for me. Tell us, can you give us a definition of helper burnout?
So I've kind of been chewing on this since we scheduled this interview, this discussion. And, you know, I batted this really highbrow clinical definition around, but it seemed like I was putting on airs. And I think, just to put it simply, I think it is helper burnout is the most extreme version of being over it that I can think of. You're just
in done. Quotations.
Yeah. Air quotes over it.
Air quotes.
Looking talking points up. I must have found the same resource because the exact same phrasing of the single most common personal consequence of practicing therapy was something I found as well. And I think that is, you know, pretty encompassing of the experience. I think helper burnout is something that happens from experiencing too much sympathy or too much empathy without having the proper boundaries in place to cope with that. Whether that's, you know, interpersonal support, professional support, or just the ability to check out.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to really set up those self-care outlets because I'm of the belief that people who willingly engage in caregiving roles or help-giving roles, they kind of are fueled by helping out. You know, it's almost a weird form of self-care in its own right. You know, it's a way to personally validate your beliefs of how the world works and, you know.
And it's part of the reason we got into this profession in the beginning.
Right.
You know, you get in, you major in social work, counseling, psychology, because you want to help other people, basically. And right. I don't think until you really get into it, you start practicing it, you don't realize how taxing it is, how draining it can be emotionally. Like I mentioned just a minute ago, I mean, I have witnessed colleagues and friends who are fellow helpers just give everything of themselves, and I see it coming because I did it, you know, first when I started out, because you just want to be the, you know, super counselor, and You know, some people don't have the ability, and there's nothing wrong with this. Some people don't have the ability to, like, set those boundaries or pull themselves back or realize that they're doing too much for the client. Because in your mind, you think, how can you do too much for somebody who needs it so desperately, right?
Absolutely. And then you factor in the element that some people who get into this field are, in the field to kind of work on their own stuff from their vicarious.
Oh, yes. That's a whole separate show.
Yeah, true that. Very true.
Therapist needing therapist, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I get it. One of the articles I read, they quoted the World Health Organization in their definition, and let me read that to you. A syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed.
Yeah.
That's harsh.
Yeah. Very, very to the point.
It's harsh, but when you think about it, yeah, I guess so, you know?
Yeah.
So, are there different stages? Go ahead, Catherine, what you got? Okay, she's holding up her hand telling me how many minutes we've got. I thought she was waving or actually wanting to talk. Are there stages of burnout?
There are. I found it fascinating while trying to find, you know, empirically supported and researched stages that something that is such a universally experienced phenomenon in this profession, it doesn't really seem to have like one expert kind of leading the pack as far as these are the steps to look for. It's just, from what I found, it was just kind of the same material, but nothing was really synthesized in one spot. But yeah. One breakdown that I found that I did appreciate was four stages of burnout from two researchers, Edelwick and Brodsky. The first stage was enthusiasm, which is that, as we discussed, that tendency to be overly available and to over-identify with your clients. I saw that it was referred elsewhere as the honeymoon phase, where you, similar to starting a new relationship, you just have high satisfaction, you're overly committed, high energy, the creativity is just kind of flowing through it. There's this overcompensatory, if you will, spirit of just wanting to prove yourself. You know, there's unbridled optimism, high productivity levels.
It's all new.
Right. And
you see that mostly with new therapists. It doesn't matter the age. It's new to the profession.
Right. And I guess you could just kind of sum all of that up by saying there's no way you're going to say no to yourself in that stage.
Exactly.
Boundaries are non-existent. I found the second stage is often referred to as stagnation. It's kind of where the expectations revert to what is a normal level of operation, but also personal discontent starts to surface. The onset of stress happens. It's not as constant yet. It's just the facade of I've got my superhero cape on and I'm helping the world starts to get some holes poked into it. You start to experience slight anxiety. Go ahead.
Can you remember when this happened to you?
I can. It was when we launched the Second Chance program. It was probably after the first court docket we had with Judge Lisenby, who's no longer on the bench. We had prepped for about 3 weeks how it was going to go. And we thought we had this well-oiled machine running and we were in court for about 5 hours and none of it went the way we had expected.
Yeah.
People were sanctioned to jail over the weekend, if not longer, for things that we weren't expecting them to be sanctioned for. And
just didn't go like you planned, like you
at
said.
All.
Yeah.
At all.
Wow.
We tried our best, and that's what we would tell ourselves in the following days. But, you know, the anxiety starts to creep in. The longer you're stuck in that stagnation phase, there's kind of this avoidance of decision making that kind of pops up.
You're just
the more you do it, the more you're doing a task that seems like, you know, the Einstein definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Yeah, exactly.
Going
do you think the stagnation phase is like the reality phase. Like, you realize, wow, you know, this is not what I thought it was going to be, and you're waking up to this is reality.
I hate to agree that that is the reality phase, because that just makes reality in general seem
like it does.
A downer.
It does.
But that's kind of when everything sorts itself out and you're like, oh, this is kind of how it's going to be every day going forward.
Yeah.
Which then segues over into the frustration phase, where those difficulties seem to compound on each other. You become bored, less tolerant of and sympathetic of the issues that you're hearing constantly. And people in those roles, they cope by avoiding and withdrawing from work relationships. The client practitioner relationship starts to dissolve a little bit.
Yes.
And, personal relationships start to suffer in that stage. There's a shift in motivation. You go from, you still kind of feel motivated sometimes. It ebbs and flows. You may get a glimpse of an experience that reminds you why you did it in the first place, but things kind of taper back off. And sometimes those responses in the frustration phase can actually lead to physical symptoms. Panic, feeling tired, general fatigue. Some people try to address those hurdles they're continually running into by increasing caffeine usage.
Mistake. Smoking,
finding stimulants wherever they can just to try to give them that pep to overcompensate for what they've lost just through the natural progression of the honeymoon phase ending. Then there's the final phase of apathy, which is arguably a functional form of depression, as far as professionally speaking, or just burnout, as people have come to recognize it. There's a marked decrease in social interaction. You almost drop out of society.
Right.
It's when you start browsing Indeed.com during your breaks to try to figure out what else is out there. You start neglecting your personal needs, just a feeling of emptiness. There's your pessimistic view of your work life starts to bleed over into your personal life. Mm-hmm. And eventually it becomes a habit.
Yeah.
So.
Have you, and we're about to take a break, Aiden, but have you ever had to confront, or have you ever witnessed a colleague who had to be confronted because there was a risk because the person was burned out?
I've personally not witnessed any sort of confrontation over that. I've been in scenarios with the Second Chance program. It launched at a certain point. There was a certain core staff there, and in most settings, everyone doesn't start together. So there's almost a tapering of the different levels. But there were times where we all collectively hit that wall, and I don't think confrontations happened because we were all in that burnout.
Same area. Yeah, you were in the same. And two, there's a sense that you may know what's happening to you, but you think you'll come out of it, and it's a little bit, I would imagine it would be a little bit, I don't know if the word's embarrassing, to like admit that.
Yeah. I mean, people in the United States put a lot of pride in what they do for a living.
Sure.
It's a huge part of your identity. And to admit that, that you aren't really feeling like going to work, or that you want to work, you're one of those lazy people who's not.
Or that you just don't care.
Right.
I mean, that's just the bottom, line. When it comes to this point, it gets so bad. Mm-hmm. You just, it's not that you don't care necessarily. It's you just don't have the capacity right now. That's what it is. Let's take a break real quick, Aiden, and then when we come back, let's talk more about how to recognize the stages and what to do about it, okay?
Sounds great.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
All right, you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone. This is Brain Matters. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and our show tonight is about helper burnout. It's not so much about college students, but some college students probably will encounter possibly a therapist who is experiencing burnout. I have heard some of my students who have been to therapists in the past talk about what they describe what may be like a burned out therapist, either from the characteristics that they say, like they were irritable or they just didn't seem like they were interested. I've had a student tell me their therapist fell asleep during the session. Yes. And that's bad. So my guest tonight is Aiden Verkus. Aiden is a licensed master social worker. He's had several jobs, most recently for this public defender's office with the Second Chance program here in Tuscaloosa. You gave us a little brief synopsis of that program, basically trying to keep people out of jail is what you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that can wear you out. That can wear you down. We just got finished going over the stages of burnout. So let's move on into how to recognize those stages. Personally, I mean, I would think sometimes it would be easier for colleagues to recognize it rather than the person themselves, the Absolutely. Therapist themselves, the helper.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, when your colleagues start noticing the burnout, it doesn't always get approached with the delicacy that something so vulnerable requires. The symptoms and the signs that someone is experiencing burnout kind of manifest to those who aren't experiencing it as someone just neglecting their job duties.
Yes, or being lazy.
Right. You see your coworker just avoiding client interactions and other duties that the job requires. You see them bailing on situations that may require a little more effort, just because they're not feeling it.
No. Coming in late to work, missing appointments.
Sometimes even just overriding ethical behaviors.
Oh yeah. And that's when it gets scary. That's when it can be dangerous. We'll go into that in a minute, but you're exactly right. It can be, in our line of work, if you are laissez-faire, now I'm speaking French, this could be life or death for some people.
Absolutely. And just the neglect of duties in certain help-giving roles, like at the Second Chance program, a lot of those people were in those programs like that for, failure and inability to do what they needed to do to stay out of trouble.
Sure.
So when the person in the help giving role neglects their duties or just puts the onus on the client 100% to figure it out, it's almost dissonant in a way, because all of a sudden you're expecting them to have the tools and the skills to do what they needed to be doing in the first place. And I'm not going to say you're setting them up for failure, self-determination and things like that, but you're certainly not doing much to advocate for helping them out of their situation.
That's right.
But,
Well, some of the other, in researching for this, some of the other, I guess, signals I found was a big one. And people often ask me about this, and I bet the two of you have had people ask you about this too. I don't know what therapist hadn't. How do you do this? How do you not bring this home with you? And I'm not going to lie. We're not machines. We're not robots. We do bring some of this home with us. There are some people who are better than others at leaving it, at the office. But when you're dealing with people's lives, I mean, there are days that I go home and I think about what people have told me, and it worries me.
Yeah.
You know, it does worry me. I can't just completely cut it off. And so that's one of the signals, though, is people who are constantly bringing their work home with them.
Absolutely.
You know, not being able to get it out of your mind on a daily basis would really burn you out quickly.
100%, especially when you're just starting out in one of these fields. You know, you're bright-eyed,
exactly.
You have an expectation for how the world works, and helping roles, the situations you find yourself in dealing with clients, they really challenge your preconceived notions of how all of this works. And they talk about self-care in school. They beat it into your head how important it is to have, you know, self-care.
Oh, yes.
Outlets set up, but that's such a proactive responsibility for something that you don't even really know what you're going to need to feel okay.
Right. And if it has gone into the apathy stage where you are depressed and listless, mm-hmm. it's going to be hard. It's really hard to even think about self-care or schedule something, because you feel like I've got to schedule another thing, or I've got to actively do something to help myself. And you're just like lost sometimes.
Yeah. It feels like telling a depressed person to just feel better.
Yeah. You know?
Well, do the thing that makes you happy. Well, it's not making me happy like it used to.
Yeah, I wish I knew what that was. That's what you're thinking in your head, you know?
Exactly.
Go back to before the break, we touched a little bit on the dangers of burnout. I mean, is burnout dangerous?
It is. It is. Not just for yourself, but for the population you're working with. I went through a burnout phase. That's actually why I left the Second Chance program. I just hit my wall. You know, I found myself wanting to do more administrative or clerical work than direct client interaction. I had a caseload of about 170 people at a time getting in front of a circuit court judge, just either hoping I'd had something to report that they were doing positive, or just trying to make a very weak case as to why someone shouldn't go to jail for the weekend.
Yeah. And
I didn't go to school for that. You know, that's for the Eric Snows of the world, you know?
That's right. But, I mean, and face it, sometimes burnout is about the job and not necessarily the profession, don't you think?
Right.
And you don't know that until you leave a job and you're happier. But you miss it.
And I loved my time at the Second Chance program.
Yeah.
There was just a lot going on and only so many people on deck to handle it. And it's a program that's still running and they're doing great things. But I had always told myself when I got to the point where I was not as concerned about someone going to jail or ultimately what would happen to them and their participation in the program, that I would leave. And I found myself there. You know, not necessarily advocating for anyone to be incarcerated, but just kind of falling in the, hey, it is what it is. They made their bed, they need to lie in it kind of a thing. And that was never my intention, you know, and
it's not how you started.
Right. And that's a way burnout gets dangerous. You know, if I'm your advocate and I can no longer advocate for you effectively, I'm essentially working against you.
Yeah.
You know, you're putting your trust in me to help you get through it, and I just don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
And
have you ever thought that the client knew it?
I hate air quotes again, fake it,
yeah. You know, because I'm sure there's a lot of therapists out there who are faking it really well, you know?
Yes. I'm sure therapists who meet with a consistent client, mine was more, you know, just checking in, but someone who has to sit there and hash out the same kind of issues over and over again, I'm sure there's a degree of, can you just figure it out, please, so we can talk about something
mm-hmm,
else?
Mm-hmm.
But I hope no one ever was able to tell the times that I was maybe a little bit more over it than I should have been.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, I mean, it would be noticeable. Hello, the therapist who fell asleep. I mean, if that's not a clue, that's just scary. You know, one of the, I mentioned having to set boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach our clients about that all the time. You know, right. For me personally, that's what changed me. I remember the time when it got really, really bad, and physically I started feeling bad, you know, and I started doing more to take care of myself, but at the same time, I had to set those boundaries. And that is what is so important. You can't worry about what your colleagues think. You can't worry about making other people mad. You have got to do it for yourself, or you're going to be burned out eventually. Yeah. You won't be able to last 20 years, you know. Right. Yeah. I think some people say they can handle one more thing, or they not only are they providing therapy, but they're doing a lot of extra stuff along with it, like they're writing books, or they're supervising, or they're doing presentations at conferences. Oh my gosh, I got into that you know, for a little bit, and finally I had to say, you know, this year I'm not going to do a presentation. I'm just going to take a step back. And that's one of the best decisions I've made. You know.
I can imagine. Did you find that there was some sort of inner turmoil when you first started saying no to things?
Of course, because people like you to say yes. They like to put more on you and take more off of themselves a lot of times, you know. And I realize you don't really even have to give a reason why you're setting that boundary.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds awful to say, but you really don't owe anybody any excuse or any reason, other than if you want to say, I need to do this for myself. Mm-hmm. Because any therapist who's been a therapist for a number of years could totally understand that.
Right.
You know, maybe it's the younger therapists who are just like, I don't know why you want to do that, you know, but and are not practiced it. Setting those boundaries, and just really it's all about being assertive too.
Yeah, so big difference between being assertive and aggressive.
Exactly.
My automatic response when someone asks me something is to do the polite thing, you know, and try to, even if I can't do it, try to find some easily acceptable excuse or, you know, an explanation.
Exactly.
Why I can't do it. Instead of just saying no and standing in that.
That's right. You don't really owe it to anybody. After you get off of work, that's your time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as therapists, we have to protect that. I mean, you just have to learn to do that. And some people are better at it than others. I've seen that, you know. And also, how would you tell someone who is experiencing burnout, or maybe in the early stages of burnout where they're not completely apathetic, how would you tell them that you're not going to be able to help everybody? I remember a psychologist telling me, you can't save everybody, BJ. And it just hit me real hard. Because I thought, well, am I trying to do that? Yes, I was trying to do that. But how would you talk to somebody, or did you experience this where you felt like at one point you just thought you could help everybody and sometimes you can't?
Absolutely. Especially when you're working in a setting where someone makes a decision and there is a deliberate consequence.
Yes.
That they're facing, you know, whether it's a sanction or being revoked from the program and sent to prison, you see, there's so many times in life where someone makes a mistake and you don't really see them reap what they sow until further down the line. But in a setting where you, as soon as you know someone makes some sort of mistake or an infraction, you know what the tangible punishment is going to be.
Yeah.
You go into this protector mode almost, you know. It took me a long time to get to the point where I would remind myself, oh, there's a social work code of ethics that kind of protects me from feeling like I am the champion of everyone's causes.
Yes. You know?
Remember, self-determination is a thing. And remind yourself, they didn't plead into a program so you could prevent them from going to prison. You know?
Exactly.
They signed up for it. You know, I can't do the sanction for them. I didn't do the infraction.
They had a choice.
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. Let's take another short break, Aiden, and then we'll come back. I want to talk a little bit more about the difference between burnout. I want to talk about what compassion fatigue actually is, and then we'll go into some more questions and some tips on what to do about if you're feeling burned out as a helper, okay?
Okay.
Hang in there. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther. Tonight we're talking about helper burnout. My guest is Aiden Burkus. Aiden has been talking to us. He's a licensed master social worker. And Aiden, you've actually experienced this helper burnout, so you can speak to this personally, which is very beneficial to other people who are listening to this. And if students are listening to this, it might help you identify if your therapist is going through some of this, you know, because it's something to really watch out for. Tell us a little bit about burnout versus compassion fatigue. We talked about this just a little bit, but what's the difference?
Well, burnout is, like I said earlier, it's more of the feeling of just being over it. You know, it's more of an interpersonal struggle. Almost just your ability to tolerate is just worn thin. My experience with compassion fatigue, the best summary I have of it is more experiential. I would be in court and I would stand up in front of a judge with clients, and they would plead their really sad cases in front of the judge. And a lot of them would be like, I have no support. I have no one to love me, no one to take care of me, in a nutshell. And I would leave court and I would drive home and I would just call my mother and cry for the first few weeks.
Yeah.
I'm so like, thank you so much for being there for me. Thank you so much for supporting me. Just basic tenets of a mother-child relationship. And I would just get so overwhelmed from hearing people's just terribly tragic stories about things that they didn't have a say in. And that, I wouldn't say it leads to you checking out as much as it leads to you kind of doing a personal inventory of
a way to identify
your own situation. So compassion fatigue, in large doses, has the same outcome of burnout. You know, you're just ineffective compared to how you were when you started, maybe, but it's less of a personal affront and more of you're just kind of catching secondhand sadness, if you will.
Yeah, one of the articles that I found is simply called Fatigue, Burnout, and Exhaustion. What's the difference? I didn't even think about exhaustion.
Yeah.
Exhaustion and fatigue describe, really, it sounds physical. Mostly, you think about it as being mostly physical, but it can be emotional too. A lot of what I read in the article is burnout is more difficult to address because it depends on the intensity and the length. As opposed to, like, you're exhausted, you can get a good night's sleep and have a good meal and you might feel better, you know, catching up on that. But burnout, just, it doesn't go away that easily either.
Yeah, burnout seeps into your lifestyle. I feel like compassion fatigue is something you can kind of expel just by going to your own therapy session.
Yeah.
You know, talking.
Remedies. There's quicker remedies, it feels like.
Right. But burnout is deep, deep seated.
One of the, it may or may not have anything to do with the helper burnout, but it certainly would have to do with job burnout, maybe, or just burnout in general. I found an article that is pertinent to what we're all kind of experiencing. I have felt really more tired with the Zoom meetings. You know, I didn't think I could get more tired when you see like 6 or 7 clients a day, physically see them. But, you know, this is a phenomenon that's hit me pretty hard, and I didn't realize it until after weeks of seeing clients on Zoom. And I found an article talking about work from home burnout. And it resonated, you know, because there is no separation from work. You get out of bed, you go to the bathroom, you go into the kitchen, get your breakfast, and then you go to your workspace, wherever it is in your house. So there's just no separation. Does that resonate with you at all?
Yes. So I'm currently back at my office and my current job. There was about a 9-week period where I was working from home, and I made myself get up and get ready like I was going to work every day.
Yes, me too.
I would not stay in my pajamas. I'd make myself take a shower, just try to go through the motions best I could. I honestly can't imagine what therapy has been like over Zoom. You know, there's such an adrenaline rush. I'm not saying therapy is like a performative thing, you have to be on, you know, there's
all the time.
And
with Zoom, it's even more.
Yeah. You're probably overcompensating
Zoom
for the
burnout.
Nonverbal.
Yeah.
A lot of nonverbal communication that happens in client practitioner interactions. And I feel like Zoom probably eliminates a lot of that just natural electricity.
It sure does. On top of the technology stuff, you know, like we've experienced here tonight. Let's talk about, before we have to go, I want to get to the good stuff, the juice of the show. What are some tips for burnout? Is it too late when you get to that point? Is it no going back? Is it no going back?
You know, I really dug deep when trying to answer this and did what I could to find some really motivational end of the sitcom peppy
outline.
But I think you're onto something. I don't want to say it's too late because, you know, as long as you're breathing, you can change and all of that, those important tenets of therapy. But it really is something you have to be proactive about. You have to get in front of it and establish a solid self-care practice before you're at the point where the best form of self-care seems like doing nothing at all. And that's something I really regret not taking the advice of every professional I'd ever interacted with who had told me that, you know? and it's not enough just to come up with a self-care practice. You have to update your self-care practice when what you were doing before starts feeling a little static, you know, when it's not, and then it just becomes part of the routine, you know, and then you get burnt out on your hobbies. And, you know, I really do struggle to think of ways to pull yourself out of burnout other than taking some time. If you have any knowledge on how to approach that, please show it.
I think the first thing is you have to recognize it's happening.
Right.
You have to recognize it's happening so you can take some sort of action. You know, the relaxation part of it, yes, that is definitely one aspect, taking time for yourself. But if you don't know it's happening and you just keep going through the motions, nothing ever changes. You know, one of the first things, engage in things that bring you joy and relieve stress, right? That's a lot easier said, I know, than done.
Absolutely.
Or we'd all be doing it all the time, you know. Some little things like break it down to taking time each day to relax, and I tell my students this, the ones who are perfectionists and they're not happy with just an A, they wanted the A+. And I ask them, like, do you take time out to look out your window and watch birds, or just look out the window and appreciate the nice weather? I know it sounds elementary to say that, but so many people don't do that, and I don't get that. You know, that's where I don't relate to people sometimes, because I have had the ability to do that, and that's probably saving me from complete apathy.
Really solid. Something I was thinking, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go
something
ahead.
I was thinking about while trying to come up with with ways of coping with burnout was I was really struck by, there's this weird attitude that kind of permeates our culture right now, this weird hustle culture where if you're not finding a way to make money outside of your job, you're somehow failing. You know, a lot of people are trying to monetize their hobbies, like, let me sell these crafts or, you know, make YouTube videos on self-care.
Yes. And it wears you out.
Right. And I really feel for, I mean, the current situation in this country, people are doing whatever they can to find sources of income. So I'm really curious to see if there's any research that comes out from not just caregiver or general burnout, but particularly this working at home burnout.
And trying to do too many things at once.
Right.
You know, being all to everyone, it's just not possible. You know, for us, here's an issue, is taking on extra clients. I think I mentioned this earlier, when I started doing my private practice, but working here full time, it was a relief to be able to limit and not feel guilty, limit who I saw at my private practice. Because before, I would just see anyone, I would take any client, no matter the difficulty of the case. And that's not good, I don't think.
Yeah, I would imagine that you're spinning a lot of plates trying to deal with problems that you may not feel equipped to.
Learning to say no, you mentioned that, you know, that's easier said than done. I think you get to a point where you have to say no. Mm-hmm. And some people have a longer frustration tolerance, I guess is how you'd say that, for saying no.
Yeah. I've really had to remind myself that there is so much power in saying no, and saying no to others is saying yes to yourself. That is a form of self-advocacy.
Yeah.
I
know we have to keep up as professionals. We have to keep up with the trends, the research, but don't you just hate these therapists who are always reading books about therapy? I mean, that is, that gets old real quick. And one of the things I read in one of the articles is read non-professional literature.
Yes.
You know, just read something for the fun of it.
Yes. Not everything has to be a CEU.
No. No. But you know, you and I both know those therapists who are doing that. And okay, if you enjoy doing that, but that adds on, that stacks on to the burnout, you know.
Right. And I know a lot of therapists who follow therapy accounts on social media.
Ugh.
And that, I mean, I'm sure that's its own radio show, you know, social media therapists. Yeah. But just find a way to disengage with what you're spending most of your day doing. You know, you're at work longer than you're sleeping most days.
Something's wrong.
Yeah. Find a way to love yourself a little bit. Take a break.
Hey, Aiden. Finally, do you have any resources for listeners? Any cool apps or any cool books that we mentioned? Any kind of resources for any counselors who may be listening and want some help with this?
There's a big need for self-care apps even just programs that do self-care assessments or burnout assessments. I did find there's some self-care checklists to determine kind of like an aptitude test to see what kind of job you're interested in for what type of self-care may be beneficial to you. I can send you that info if there's a way to post that.
Can people just Google it?
Yeah, I think I just Googled self-care checklist.
There you go.
That easy. I know there's a few podcasts, if that's your thing. There's one, it's not deliberately employment burnout, but there's a compassion fatigue podcast on Spotify. That one covers a lot of fields that deal with compassion fatigue outside of your typical therapies, nursing roles. You know, they'll talk to veterinarians, wildlife conservationists.
Oh my gosh.
Animal groomers, foster parents, just a gamut of people who are interacting with others in a role where they're supposed to provide some sort of care. And that's really interesting to hear how there's so many universal concepts regardless of who your client base is.
I know, you're right. But, wow. Well, those are good. Those are really good suggestions. I know there's a need for this.
Absolutely.
There's not a whole lot of literature. I mean, it all kind of says the same thing, you know,
right,
if you think about it. So I hope anybody who's listening to this and experiencing burnout will get some help, will ask for help, or at least realize that this is going on and make some changes before it gets to the apathy stage.
You know what? I did think of a resource. Technology aside, talk to people.
Yeah. That's the simplest thing. Talk to your colleagues.
You're not the only one going through that.
No, you're not. Everybody who's been a therapist, I know, or a helper for a little bit of time has started to feel tired. Mm-hmm. So I know you could at least talk about that, you know? Yeah. Thanks for being on the show, Aiden.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I appreciate it. You always do a good job. I appreciate it so much.
Thanks.
We're going to close really quickly. We've got a new platform, I guess, where our shows will be podcasted. They're recorded and podcasted. So this is the new platform. It's voices.ua.edu. If you want to listen to some of our shows, our past shows, just go to voices.ua.edu and just type in Brain Matters and you'll see some of our past shows. It's also on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. There's a link for the Voices, voices.ua.edu. So that's kind of a new thing that we're doing. I want to mention the University of Alabama has a 24-hour hazing and harassment hotline. It's 205-348-4258, and it allows students, parents, or others to report incidents of discrimination, harassment, hazing, or any other kind of unhealthy behavior. An individual calling the hotline can leave a confidential message with the Office of the Dean of Students, and callers to the hotline are anonymous. Callers are asked to include as much detailed information as possible, and if you need more information, call the Office of the Dean of Students at 205-348-3326, or you can visit hazing.ua.edu. I always like to thank some people who've made this show possible. As always, our executive director of the Counseling Center, Dr. Greg Vanderwall, Terry Siggers from the Office of Student Media. My production assistant tonight is Catherine Howell. And of course, I'd like to thank my colleagues at the Counseling Center and the WVUA staff who do a wonderful job of editing my show. And my guest tonight, Aiden Furcus. Thanks, Aiden. Next week, we're going to have a very interesting topic that I think probably affects most students. It's money. Well, not most students, because it's going to be money and mental health. So, you know, if you don't have any money to go to school, that's going to affect your mental health. I can probably say that. But thanks again for listening to Brain Matters tonight, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.